My name is Ariel. I moved to the US at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for listening this week. Big week with the Super Bowl. So we reached out, and Boomer Esiason, former Bengal, kind enough to come on the pod. Obviously, you guys know Boomer from the NFL Today on CBS. And my fellow New Yorkers know I'm here on The Fan in New York every morning, Boomer and Geo, 6 a.m. So with the history of the Bengals and Boomer having a great run there, I thought he was a perfect guest this week to talk about the Super Bowl with the Bengals and Rams. And we also do a lot of media stuff and get into Boomer's career calling NFL games on radio. And he touches on what happened at the Chiefs-Bengals halftime where the CBS crew was drowned out. And we get into sort of the philosophy of doing radio and what doing morning sports talk morning radio is like, all with Boomer. Then we go into Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata after the Boomer Esiason interview. And Sal and I touch on some Super Bowl prop bets and watching the Super Bowl, what that's like. And we talk about some things we've watched recently. I went on a binge craze this weekend and watched a bunch of shows. So we discuss all that in Train of Thoughts. Before we get to the interviews with Boomer and Train of Thoughts, just a reminder, if you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, they're all there in the archives for you to listen to. Check them out. Brian Curtis from The Ringer was on last week. Got a ton of great feedback. People really, Brian and I spent about 10 minutes talking about Radio Row, and I got a ton of feedback from people who really liked that conversation. So Brian Curtis of The Ringer, he's at Radio Row this week, and we talked about it on last week's pod, so check that out. 2 weeks ago, Roman Reigns, Joe Buck, Jim Nance were on a mega episode of the pod. Nance was on 2 weeks before that, and then Richard Deitch, Al Michaels, Tom Rinaldi, all recent guests on the SI Media Podcast, so check those out in the archives. And if you could rate and review, that helps. I'll read the review on the pod when you leave one. All right, let's get right now to this week's episode with Boomer Esiason on the Super Bowl and then Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, perfect guest to have on this week with the Bengals of all teams in the Super Bowl, one of the all-time Bengals, Boomer Esiason, also of WFAN Radio in New York, CBS Sports. Obviously, you know I'm on the NFL Today. Boomer, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on today. So what's up?
Oh, what's up? We've got the Super Bowl. And as a Boomer and Geo listener, I want to thank you first and foremost for not going to Radio Row this week, because those are unlistenable shows no matter whose show is. Whoever the radio show is. So thank you for not going to Radio Row, first of all.
Well, you know, it was a big deal for us because of my tie to the Bengals and CBS and Jim Rome being out there, Maggie and Perloff being out there, part of CBS Radio and CBS Sports Network. You know, we were the show that was left out. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not big on Super Bowl shows. I hate the interviews. Everybody's pushing a product. Hell, I was pushing a product for a lot of those years. So I understand all that. But at the end of the day, being back in our studio, being able to have a normal type of show and a normal conversation, depending on what's going on around here, to me, I think is more entertaining to the listener anyway.
I know for me, I don't like having a guest on who's doing a million interviews that week. And for you as a radio host, when you would go to Radio Row, would you hate that you were just part of the conveyor belt?
You know, it all depends, because both Gio and Greg G and I, Craig Carton, are really good interviewers, and they have a unique way of bringing personality into the subjects that we're talking to. And the fact that I'm a former NFL player and some guys feel a little bit more comfortable maybe with me up there and those guys asking ridiculous questions, that it actually was entertaining, at least for us individually. But we know back home, it doesn't sound right. There's a lot of background noise. It gets a little awkward at times, especially when somebody wants to talk about their ED pills that they're pushing or their extends like Jimmy Johnson did. I mean, those things sometimes lend to funny interviews and awkward moments, but I don't think overall the entertainment value is there.
Yeah, it could be funny for a day, but when you get 5 days, you know, the old school radio, you know, Mike and the Mad Dog in the old days, 5 days of it, it was unbearable. We got to talk about the Bengals in the Super Bowl, but let me just put a bow on two things that happened recently, just since I have you. The first, you talked about it on your radio show, but for my listeners nationally who may not have heard it on The Fan, the halftime show at the AFC title game, where I wrote in my column that your facial expressions were the best thing about it, because you were like, what the hell is going on? So you guys knew there would be a concert going on, but you didn't realize the speaker was going to be right behind you during that. Is that what how it played out?
That's exactly right, Jimmy. And I saw them moving the speaker into place and I was like, this is not going to be good. There's just no way. So for those people who live in New York and live on Long Island, know that I have a all-star football game, or I had an all-star football game at Hofstra. And I would ring the inside of the stadium with all these speakers and I'd be playing music throughout the game because, you know, we weren't getting 75,000 fans. So it was part of the in-stadium experience. So I understand all of that. Right. But when you put a speaker right behind guys that have amplified IFBs in their ear with microphones, those microphones amplify what they're hearing. So we can hear, but the problem is they amplified the speaker so we couldn't hear. And I was trying to read lips, actually. Right. And I couldn't hear anything that anybody was saying. And even Nate, who sits next to me, is screaming. I couldn't hear a word he was saying because my microphone kept picking up the Applebee's song.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you got to be kidding me. So I was thinking to myself, if I were home and I were watching this, how would I be reacting to the five idiots standing up there with all this noise behind them? And I thought that, you know, my take on things in the moment, at least, seemed to be reasonable. And my producer, Drew Kliske, said, thank you very much for saying what was on everybody's mind.
You know, it was great too. I was watching it live, and afterwards, when everyone realized no one could hear you guys, you and Nate started dancing, and then they cut to commercial. I was livid. I said, just instead of them talking, just show Boomer and Nate dancing. That was good enough. What,
you know, it's live TV, man. What are you going to do? Right. I mean, that's the way it is every week with us. But, you know, we're not normally outside in the environment. So we used to be when I first started in the NFL Today, we were over at 58th and 5th Avenue right across.
Oh,
the
yeah. I remember
the
Plaza. That. Yeah.
Right. And that was a pain in the neck. Yeah. But I think really only one show does that really well. And that's the ESPN Game Day, because they capture the spirit of college football and all the people that are excited about, you know, having them on campus. You know, trying to do it in an NFL setting is almost impossible.
Yeah. Can you share with us? I'm just curious, like when it ended and you guys go to commercial, what was said at like, did you turn to Nate and say what the F was going on? Or like, what did you guys say to each other as soon as the mics were off?
Once the mics were off, we got off that stage and got out of that stadium as quick as we possibly could. And then we got back to our trailer and basically we're talking to each other going, what was that? And then, you know, Drew Kliske, our producer, came in. He goes, first of all, guys, I'm really sorry about that happening. We had no real understanding or knowledge that was going to happen. And number two, he thanked us for being exceptionally professional and handling it. And, you know, the guy that's most amazing to me, Jimmy, and people don't realize this, so we're on a jib camera that's floating in front of us, and there's a very small prompter. It's about the size of my iPad that I'm talking to you on right now. And it's a distance away from us, probably about 50 feet away from us. And JB has to read the prompter in the middle of all of that madness. And plus, it was extremely bright, so the prompter wasn't all that good anyway. You could barely see it. But somehow, James Brown, the ultimate professional, has probably dealt with a million different things in this industry, seamlessly went right through it and just kind of like made it like we were in studio. I don't know how he did it. I thought he was going to get blown off his chair when it started, but somehow he did it and it was amazing.
Well, he's a pro, so I'm not surprised he handled that well. The other thing, I don't want to rehash the Aaron Rodgers thing because it was so convoluted and The only thing I'm curious about, because he is sort of the type that may do this. Did Aaron Rodgers ever reach out to you directly after that whole kerfuffle?
No. I think that he would realize, like most people realize, sane people anyway, that it was an edited piece that was put together. It was picked up by legitimate news sources that was reacted to by the Green Bay Packers. And of course, then, you know, Pat McAfee and Aaron Rodgers, they all have to react to it. You know, notice I never apologize for anything because we didn't do anything wrong. And right. I'm not apologizing for something that people are reacting to that I had nothing to do with intentionally. So it is a kerfuffle. It's unfortunate that it happened, but it came on the heels of me, you know, doing a couple of things that I did report on our show and that have come true. So I don't take a victory lap for those things, but it's unfortunate. I let everybody else fight those battles. Those battles are beneath me, and I don't really get into the fake news, if you will.
He just seems like the type that might reach out to have a conversation. Because there was when the article came out about him having COVID toe in the Wall Street Journal, I know he called that reporter actually called him, and then he called him back, and they had a conversation about that.
Well, I've actually interviewed Aaron quite a bit, and Aaron and I have a very funny story that involves my son. And we rehashed that a few times. And I would think that Aaron would know better. But then again, he was ambushed much like everybody else was. And he's also, you know, he's a lightning rod for his vaccine takes and things of that nature. And so he's like, he's just on thin ice. So anything that's being said about him, he's going to react to, especially in that vein, kind of like Brian Flores. You know, we're living a personal experience from somebody who's reacting to things that have happened to them. And unfortunately, things happen and guys get themselves into a mess, and you just got to deal with it. That's all there is to it.
Let's go to the Bengals here in the Super Bowl. I've been trying all week to think about if someone would have said before the season, the Bengals are going to be in the Super Bowl. You would have been shocked, but I don't, you know, just because Joe Burrow is so freaking good, I don't think I am as shocked about it as everyone, but you are so inside the Bengals, having been there for so long when you played there and connections there. Is this completely shocking to you, or is it maybe not as shocking as people think that the Bengals made it there?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, doing one of the Bengals podcasts, I don't know which one, there's about 10 of them. So early on in the season, doing a pre-season type of thing, I didn't think they were ready yet. I thought they were going to be a year away because I didn't know how healthy Joe Burrow was going to be. Right. I kind of knew the dedication that he put towards his rehab because I went out in August and we watched tape together of each other's tapes and kind of did a show for NFL Network. But and I felt like he was really confident about his knee. They weren't going to let him play in preseason. So I really wondered whether or not that would impact them early in the season and could they fall behind and then never catch up. So I have to tell you, I didn't think they were going to make it this year. But as the year unfolded and we started to see like Jamar Chase all of a sudden start catching the ball and the big play started happening on offense. And then Trey Hendrickson, one of their free agent signees, was having an unbelievable year early on in terms of sacks and getting turnovers. I thought maybe they would have a chance. And in a 17 game season, anything was possible. And then when you take a look at where Ben Roethlisberger was in his career, the fact that Lamar Jackson got hurt and Baker Mayfield was playing with a bad shoulder. I mean, all the things lined up for the Bengals really to fill the void, if you will. And they did that. And the game that really said to me that they had arrived was a game that they won late in the season on the road at Denver. They had lost the previous 2 weeks to San Francisco and the Chargers at home, of all places. Right. And they had to go on the road to save their season. And they won a game 15-10 at the Broncos. And, you know, that was a point in the season where the Broncos were trying to play to make it to the playoffs. They were still in the mix there. And that was a really key win for them because then they won their next two. They didn't have to play their last game against Cleveland. So they've won six out of their last seven games, including the playoffs. And it's all come together for them. So a little bit surprising, yes, but I'm not surprised at all about Joe Burrow. I knew he was going to be this good. Yeah. I knew that they were going to draft him number one overall. He is an Athens, Ohio kid, Jimmy, and it's the perfect scenario for the Cincinnati Bengals.
You know, it's funny. When the Rams played the Patriots in that Super Bowl, and, you know, back then, people thought Jared Goff was a very good quarterback. He got the Rams to the Super Bowl. And I remember watching that Super Bowl and thinking, and you know, who am I to say this? I'm not a player, ex-player, but I remember watching that and thinking that Jared Goff was basically soiling himself on national television. Like, he was not ready for that game or Bill Belichick. And I think it's the complete opposite with Burrow. I don't think you're going to see any of that against the Rams on Sunday.
You won't see any of that. And remember who Jared Goff's quarterback coach was in that Super Bowl. Presently, he is the head coach for the Cincinnati Bengals, Zach Taylor.
Right.
So Zach has been through this. Zach knows what's going on. And obviously, Zach knows McVay extremely well. Yeah. And knows everything. And back, they both know each other really well. So there's not going to be any surprises coming any which way from any of these teams. But I will say that Joe Burrow has got, you know, he's got brass balls, man. He does. Yeah. He's ice in his veins. And he is a guy that he has like a unique personality. Like, he is extremely competent. He borders on like cocky and arrogance.
Yeah.
But then when you interview him, you don't feel that. You feel like a guy that's kind of mainstream and kind of low key. I say he has Tom Brady tendencies. I'm not saying that he is Tom Brady. I'm right. just saying that in the pocket, the way he delivers his interview requests and questions and all that kind of stuff, he's got a Tom Brady air about him. And he's, you know, he's 25 years old. It's not like he's 21 or 22. So right. he is mature. He's been around the block a little bit. And I think he's been a revolutionary kind of, you know, game-changing player for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his. And he made me a little nervous last week. I think I said this on the podcast last week when he had that quote about he wasn't worried about Arrowhead. All the SEC stadiums are louder than Arrowhead. And I was like, I don't know if you want to say that. But then he actually proved him, you know, he went out and got the job done. And I actually loved what he said this week. It might have even been yesterday, Monday, about staying away from social media, giving advice to, you know, you don't need to work out, put on social media. Don't. I think he hasn't tweeted since July. And I think for someone of his age, that's a very, very, because you don't need all of the bullshit that comes with social media if you're a 25-year-old quarterback. You just don't need it. So I
couldn't even imagine. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like to be an athlete today. I mean, the way the fans can get to you, the way like a Kevin Durant will interact with his fans. Now, look, he's one of the greatest basketball players of his lifetime. So I can understand where he comes from, a very high platform, and he can look down at people and maybe just deal with it and have fun with it. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think the fact that Joe Burrow does not get involved with social media is probably one of the best aspects about him, because, I mean, look what happened with Patrick Mahomes with his wife or his fiance and his brother. I mean, you know, he's all of a sudden become this unlikable trio that it's like, well, why do we have to deal with all of this stuff on social media when we think Patrick is already such a great player on the field?
Right, right. If you can, give my listeners a sense of sort of what this means for Cincinnati, having been there for so long, one of the faces of the franchise. You know, the Bengals, you know, there's a handful of franchises across sports that have been laughing stocks for so long. Unfortunately for you, the Bengals have been one of them, but they're coming out of it obviously now and with Burrow. But give me the vibe of Cincinnati and what this means.
Well, I think, like you say, there's this sense that they've been the Bungles, and there have been times where they have been, and I think most of us would admit that. But there's been a lot of times where they've been stable. You know, they had a run with Kenny Anderson, they had a run with me, they had a run with Jeff Blake a little bit, they had a run with Carson Palmer, Andy Dalton, and now comes Joe Burrow. So Mike Brown, the owner there, the guy that you saw accept the Lamar Hunt Trophy in Kansas City, that's the same guy who drafted me. You know, he played quarterback at Dartmouth. His dad was the great Paul Brown. This family knows nothing else but the football team. That's it. And the family is involved at all levels of the football team. As a matter of fact, Mike's daughter, Katie, will end up running the team when Mike ends up, you know, when he dies. So it's not going to change hands. It will never change hands. And it's run a lot like the way the Steelers run their team. The way the Rooneys do. They always are stable. And, you know, a lot of people thought that they were going to fire Zach Taylor after his second year because he had only won six games those 2 years, 2-4. Now, losing two won him the lottery the year that he won four because he was able to draft Joe Burrow. Then Joe Burrow got hurt. And Mike Brown is smart enough to know, and it's been around long enough, knows quarterbacks, knows coaches. He saw that he had the perfect coach and he was going to marry him with the perfect quarterback because Joe's rookie year, he early got off to a great start. So he saw all of that and knew that Zach Taylor wasn't going to be fired. So Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow right now are the heroes in Cincinnati. The community is crazed over them. Everything is black and orange. They're giving the kids off from school on Monday. Hopefully they win on Sunday. And I mean, a city like Cincinnati really buys into stuff like this. And it's just an air of positivity. Like, you can't even imagine, Jimmy. Like, yeah. You know, around here in New York, we're hit over the head with the idiot stick every single day. And we're all negative. Everything yeah. comes from a negative perspective. Right now, that's not the case out there in Cincinnati. And that's why great teams, no matter what sport they are in, can really ignite a city and get a city, you know, to all come together and root for one single thing. And that's exactly what's happening.
If I ask you, what's the all-time greatest moment in Bengals franchise history, what would you say it is?
Wow. Well, it'd probably be one of the two AFC championship wins. I would think that the win over the San Diego Chargers that Kenny Anderson led in the Freezer Bowl game is probably the greatest single memory, simply because that game goes down in history as one of the coldest, if not the coldest game in the history of the league. And it was a remarkable performance by Kenny and the Bengals that day. I remember I was sitting in front of a fireplace down by the University of Maryland, and I was going, man, I hope the Bengals don't draft me. Oh my God, I don't want to go play there.
You know, it's funny because I was trying to do a little research, and I on your Wikipedia page, it said that Mel Kiper said that you went ballistic during the draft. That was the word on the Wikipedia page, ballistic, because you lasted into the second round and you thought you would go sooner. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate, actually. A number of things happened in the 1984 draft. Steve Young was going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. And oddly enough, at that time, the Bengals had the number one pick. And they thought they had a deal done with Steve Young, but he signed with the LA Express in the USFL. That left me as the next quarterback. And I'm figuring maybe I'll sign with the Bengals. The Bengals traded the number one pick to the New England Patriots. They took Irving Fryer. The Bengals then had three picks in the first round. And back then there were only 28 teams. At the same time, the year before 1983, my senior year in college, John Elway told the Baltimore Colts, go screw up. I don't want to sign with you. I want to go play with the New York Yankees and I want to be traded. So he pulled an Eli Manning before Eli Manning pulled it. So he decided where he wanted to play. And if you remember, leading into that 84 draft, that spring is when the Mayflower moving vans came and were all loaded up and they ran out of Baltimore and went to Indianapolis. Yeah. And Ernie, of course, he was the GM of that team at that time and has told me numerous times over the years that I would have been their first round draft pick that year. I would have been the quarterback of the Baltimore Colts and I would have wore the number 7 that my idol Burt Jones wore. And I would have been playing in Memorial Stadium, which would have been a dream come true for me. But they moved. I had a press conference that I never want to play for the Colts because of all my family and friends in Baltimore were pissed off at them. Right. And I fell to the second round and Sam Weish picked me with the 4th overall pick of the Bengals in that draft. And he called me and he said, you want to come and play in Cincinnati? I said, man, I thought you guys forgot about me.
I was in Cincinnati. So what does ballistic entail? Like just cursing and punching the table and stuff like that?
I was in my college dorm room with my college roommates and I was pissed. I really, you know, cost me a couple $1 million. I could tell you that. Right. And two of my teammates at the University of Maryland did go in the first round. They did go before me. And to their credit, they waited for me so we could have a combined press conference for the three of us that were drafted in the top 38 picks because I went number 38. So, yeah, I was pissed. Yeah. It cost me a lot of money. I put a lot of time and effort into it. I went down to the NFL Combine despite separating my left shoulder in my final college game, the Citrus Bowl. And I went down there, met everybody and tried to impress everybody that I was a fighter, that I was a competitor. And I think it really backfired on me.
Right. Well, it worked out in the end, though. Yeah. Eventually. With the Bengals. Just to circle back, I just want to give you my all-time greatest moment in Bengals franchise history. Because if anyone doesn't know about it, go on YouTube and look. Sam Weish. You're not from Cleveland. That's the greatest. That's the greatest moment in Bengals history. I write a column and have been working online for so many years. My brain just automatically goes to imagine if this happened when Twitter was around. And that's a classic. If Twitter was around for Sam White to see an NFL head coach grab the microphone of the stadium and scold the crowd. An all-time moment.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What stadium at that point in time has a microphone on the field? Nobody. Only the Bengals. And you know why the Bengals had a microphone on the field?
Why? I'm dying to know.
It's the only PA announcer in the history of any sport that I know of that was actually roaming the sidelines behind the visiting team announcing the game from the field. And his name was Tom Kinder.
Oh my God.
There were two people who took that microphone from him and actually spoke into it other than Sam Weish. And they were players. One was Joe Theismann of the Redskins. And the other was me when I came back there in a preseason game with the Jets, I think it was. And because we knew the microphone was there and we wanted to hear our voice come over the loudspeaker. So imagine me, the starting quarterback of the Bengals, watching my head coach trot across the field via the opposing team sideline. I think we were playing the Seattle Seahawks. And he picks up that microphone from Tom Kinder, the PA announcer, on the sideline and does what he does and says what he says. Yeah. But that was just one of probably about 30 Sam Weish moments. That's why I didn't think of it as the greatest moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's such a perfect video. And, you know, the scene, the weather and everything about it, you're not from Cleveland. That line is just.
Well, that's because he was reacting to what happened the week before in Cleveland. There were snowballs being thrown at a field goal kicker in Cleveland, and it was a big story.
Right.
So the next week, of course, we play at home. There's snow, and there's a couple fans throwing at the field goal kicker of the Seattle Seahawks. Hence, that's why he ran across the
he
field.
He did a sprint.
I think Chuck Knox was the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Probably was going, what in the hell is going on? And
it's a perfect video, that's a huge part of it, is the full-blown sprint. He's got the arms going and everything. It was great.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to talk about some radio stuff because you've been on the radio here in New York for so long, but let's just put a bow on the Bengals. How do you see it playing out Sunday? Close game?
I do know that the Bengals have a severe disadvantage. The right side of their offensive line is going to be overmatched by, Aaron Donald and Von Miller. And you know that Raheem Morris is going to have Aaron Donald to the defense's left, the offense's right. They're going to try to single him up either inside on the guard or outside on the tackle. And they'll do some other things inside to try to occupy other blockers. And somebody's going to have to try to block him one-on-one. And the good thing about Joe Burrow, two things. Number one, he does get the ball out of his hands relatively quickly. And number two, if he is sacked, he hasn't fumbled. So he does a good job of controlling the football. He's like the anti-Daniel Jones, if you will. So Daniel Jones has been known as fumbling. So defensive coordinators say, get near him, knock the ball out of his hands. It's going to happen. That has not been the case with Joe Burrow. So I do like the Bengals. I'm rooting for them. I want them to win. I want to become an afterthought in Cincinnati. I don't want everybody always reflecting back 33 years to the last time we did something. And this team is making its own mark and it's making its own memories. And I believe they're going to win on Sunday. I really do. I think a lot of things have gone their way. And I think they'll continue to go their way because I think they're good enough.
It's amazing they were able to get to the Super Bowl with Jamar Chase having drops in preseason. How'd they overcome that to get here? It's amazing. I mean, it's just unbelievable that they were able to do that. I mean, talk about the most blown out of proportion, dumbest narrative storyline in the history of the league was Jamar Chase might not be good because he had drops in preseason games. I mean,
well, everybody was wondering because they hadn't seen him. He took off for COVID, so he didn't play that final year at LSU. So nobody knew. And interestingly enough, I think it was around week 5 or 6, I think I interviewed him for the NFL Today. And I did ask him about that. I asked him about his drops and things of that nature. But if you watch him, Jimmy, sometimes he tries to catch the ball like a weird way.
Okay. You know,
and it's just a natural thing for him to do it. Like he doesn't, it's not always the way that you would want him to catch it, but sometimes his hands are like backwards. And for him, it's natural. For us, it looks kind of unique. And we all say that maybe that's why he drops balls, but he has enormous hands, by the way. And we're in a league that is just obsessed with hand size. Joe Burrow has one of the smallest sets of hands of all the quarterbacks in the league, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But good for Jamar, and he's a good kid and obviously a really great friend to Joe Burrow.
It was just amazing that as soon as the regular season started, the drops stopped. So don't take preseason seriously. I think that's the lesson here to take away. And the other thing with the Bengals that I loved, I wish he got more play, but the kicker is Evan McPherson is an unbelievable story. I mean, the guy's a rookie. And he is just banging every kick like there's no tomorrow. It's unbelievable. And, you know, kickers are usually, you know, they usually disappoint you here and there. But he's been, to me, that's top three stories of the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, he was the only drafted kicker in this past year's draft. He was a fifth round kicker out of Florida. And his personality is much like Joe Burrow, but he's actually a little bit more outgoing than Joe Burrow. He'll be warming up on the sideline to kick the guy, you know, the game-winning kick to go to the AFC Championship game in Tennessee. And that was not an easy kick. He's warming up and he goes, I guess we're going to the AFC Championship game as he's warming up. Yeah. And I think he felt the same way last week when he went out on the field against Kansas City in the AFC Championship game to get them to the Super Bowl.
Great story. I want to talk a little bit about your career, because in researching, you know, it blows me away that you've been at the Fan since 2007. I mean, that's a long, long time now. I mean, I remember those days when, you know, the whole Imus thing happened, and it doesn't feel like it's that long ago. But then I also, in reading up, I hope this is accurate, because this is what it says. You've done 19 Super Bowls on radio?
I did 19. I'm done.
19?
Yeah, so I started with the ABC one between the Rams and the Titans.
That was on TV. Yeah.
Right. And then after that, every single Super Bowl up until when did I quit Westwood One? About 2 years ago. So, yeah. So I did like 19 Super Bowls. Yeah.
Now, give me – so you did Monday Night Football. You've done TV. TV versus radio. Is there a bigger challenge with radio? What football on radio? I don't think, you know, everyone waxes poetic about baseball on radio. But football on the radio is a different kind of, I mean, Kevin Harlan is so great doing play by play on radio. What was that experience like, you know, doing it on radio?
I would say working with Marv Albert, Kevin Harlan, Howard David, Dave Sims, a couple times. I worked with Ian a few Thursday nights. Yeah, so, you know, these guys were all professionals. And the radio thing allows you to explain more. You're not beholden by the pictures that people are watching at home. There's no telestrator to worry about. There's no promotional drop-ins for TV shows coming up and things of that nature. There's a lot of live reads and things like that. But it's just two guys watching a football game and talking about it. And if the game goes south, then it turns into almost like a sports talk show. At least that's what I tried to make it. And most of the guys really enjoyed it. And I just, you know, my experience with ABC wasn't the greatest my first 2 years. So I needed to really refine my way. And in 2001, I went out to Fox and was a part of their Fox Sportsnet show with Jay Moore and Marv Levy and Billy Ray Smith. And
there's a cast. Chris Morton.
Yeah, it was great. But it's great. It was a really good thing for me. And then 9/11 happened and all of that whole season kind of is a blur now. And then that's when I got the job for CBS. And then I kind of got back into it with Jim Nantz. And then, of course, Greg Gumbel and now James Brown and all the different cast members that we've had on the NFL Today. I love being a part of it. I love being in the mix, especially here in New York. But it's been a great run. It really has been. And sometimes getting fired is a good thing. You know, you just got to make the most of your next opportunities.
See, since you brought it up, I had Al Michaels on this podcast back in November and asked him about, because there was all this stuff in the press that you guys didn't get along. And he said he felt like it was blown out of proportion. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. He and I have seen each other before.
Yeah.
You know, initially it stings, anytime. Like, you know, I had my Brian Flores moment. You know, you get fired and that's your experience, and then you react to that experience, and sometimes you're over emotional. You know, but he works with Chris Collinsworth now. He worked with John Madden. You know, I hear, you know, I still watch their shows. We don't disagree with anything he really does on TV. I think he's a savant when it comes to doing football games. He's great.
Maybe you, for us. Maybe you and Al can reunite on Amazon on Thursday nights.
Yeah, just what I need, another job to go fly to and then fly back on Friday morning. I'm sure Gio and the boys would love that.
So I have to, I remember back when you were doing the games on radio on Monday nights, and I knew you were doing radio in the mornings. I always thought to myself, just as a media follower, I would say to myself, I don't understand how he can do this, how you can call a Monday night football game and do a 6 a.m. radio show. And there was a part of me that didn't understand why someone would want to do that. And I think I maybe read some things you said. I mean, is it true that you were just trying to do as much to make as much because you have this foundation that you've done an unbelievable job with for your son, Gunnar, who, you know, if you're a Sports Illustrated follower, yeah, this famous cover of you and Gunnar on the cover with Gunnar being diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. And I know he's come such a long way, married, just had a kid. Was that a reason for so many jobs? Because I know you've been working so hard with the Boomer Esiason Foundation and trying to find a cure for cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, you know, I was one of the first athletes that used the NFL as a platform. And I made no bones about it, no apologies for it. And the NFL gave me this amazing platform to be able to tell our story. Nobody had ever really done anything like that before. And it's one of the reasons why I ended up taking a Monday night football job instead of staying an extra 2 years, maybe in the NFL, wallowing in relative obscurity. I wanted to really, you know, break out. And ABC also gave me the platform as well. So is CBS. So is Fox, Westwood One, WFAN Radio, CBS Radio, Odyssey Now. And it is all a part of creating that platform so I can get my voice heard for something that affects only about 30,000 people in our country. And, you know, here we are almost $200 million later. And Gunnar is now 30 years old. When he was diagnosed, Jimmy, he was expected to live to about 19, maybe go to college. And not only is he living, I mean, he, as you just pointed out, he got married last year. They just had their first baby. He is the biological father, which is virtually unheard of in the cystic fibrosis world. They did IVF, and he is the biological father. So he took a needle to the area that you and I would not want to take a needle to in order to become that father. So all of the stuff that I've been trying to do over the years, while it's great for me, it's great for our family, and I do very well financially, it's also to promote what we were doing cystic fibrosis-wise. And that I'll never make an apology for, and I'll continue to do that as long as that need is still out there.
I felt like a jerk because I would say to myself, I don't know why this guy does this. And then when I read that, I said, well, now it makes sense, because I just look at it from the standpoint of like, okay, he's doing a radio show at 6 a.m. on Monday, doing a game Monday night, and then he's on the radio at 6, like, you know. So then I read that and I'm like, well, now it'll, because I will say, you know, not to kiss your ass because you're on here, but if you go through what any athlete has done with any charity, I'm not sure anything will ever top what you guys have done with cystic fibrosis, from the money you've raised, the awareness, and then you pointed. And I have to say, I had a little fun at your expense with your son when he got married, because I wrote you. So let me, I just wanted for the listeners to get it clear.
Yes.
Your son got married on the day the Islanders had a game six, and your son-in-law is on the Islanders, married to your daughter. So right, there was that conflict there. And I think any sports fan can relate to that. You know, I know if a friend of mine gets an invitation for, you know, whatever, christening, whatever, on a Sunday during the football season, people flip out. So you had like one of the ultimate sort of conflicts there.
Well, it's a conflict because a radio show has to be a show and it has to entertain people.
Yeah.
So normally I'm a Ranger fan.
Right.
My son-in-law plays for the Islanders. My daughter's a turncoat, especially. So yeah, it was game six, and my son-in-law is supposed to be in the wedding because Gunnar wanted him to be a groomsman, and Gunnar and my son-in-law are very tight. And when my son-in-law came along in Gunnar's life was very important. It was really, they have an amazing relationship, and Gunnar got so much out of Matt Martin and learned so much, and just they became really close friends because they're close in age, and it was great to see. So, of course, he invites him to be in the wedding party, and then the Islanders' season gets moved back because they start late because of COVID.
Right.
And then, of course, they make the run to the finals in the Eastern Conference. So it runs right into the wedding. So now, of course, my guys on the radio show have to make a whole thing about this conflict. Is Matt going to the wedding? Is it going to play
at place?
It is a thing. And Islander fans, I think, were getting mad at me because I said, I expect them at the wedding and all this other stuff. I was just kidding. And then, of course, lo and behold, that night, Gunnar announces to us that he and his wife are pregnant. So we're already on cloud nine, can't even think straight. And then it turns out that Matt ends up scoring the winning game-winning goal against the Tampa Bay Lightning in game six. What a perfect night. What a just an absolutely perfect night.
What a story. It's amazing. I know you've done, I've kept you long enough. If you give me just five more minutes on a couple of radio things, I'm fascinated by morning radio. I'm curious because you've done it now, like I said, since 2007 at the Fan. Does the grind, is it just, this is your life. This is when you have to wake up, or is it still a pain in the ass to do a show at 6 a.m. every morning?
It's not a pain in the ass. I mean, if I didn't love what I do, I wouldn't do it. And they did ask me, They did ask me to move to the afternoons, you know, when Mike left and they were thinking about reuniting me and Craig and all that other stuff. And I was like, man, I don't want to leave the morning. I mean, like, look what we built here. And when I was saying we, I mean, you know, also Eddie Scazzeri, Al Dukes, Jerry Recco, Bobby Dwyer. I mean, we all built it together. And, you know, I wanted to stay there. And I know those guys wanted to stay there. I could have easily went to the afternoons, but then I was like, then my whole life is going to change again. I got this routine. I got it all down. I understand what's going on. I know what my responsibilities are. And there's nothing like, Jimmy, I'm telling you, there's nothing like being the first behind the mic after a big game.
Right.
You know, it's one of the reasons why I think I decided not to go out to the Super Bowl this year is because I want to be able to watch it and then talk about it the next day coherently and not be drunk or hungover from being at the game and watching the game with my former teammates. So, It's a labor of love for sure, but I think both Gio and I and the rest of our crew don't mind getting up and getting our day started because I get out of there at 10:30 and I can be on the golf course by noon.
Yeah, and I've become a big fan of your show, and a big reason why this is going to go. I mean, it's going to sound weird saying this on the sports media podcast is that you guys don't just do sports for 3 hours. You know, I don't know what sports talk radio stations are doing around the country, but it does seem more and more. I mean, I do this even here on the podcast with, you know, I do a segment actually with one of your colleagues, Sal Licata, comes on every week and we do a segment where we barely talk about sports. It seems like sports stations that don't do sports, it's becoming more and more of a thing. How do you feel about that?
Well, we've been that way since me and Craig started. Now, everybody was wondering about what we were going to do and how we were going to react. And, of course, the foundation of the station is sports. So a lot of things, you know, go around the Mets and the Yankees, the Knicks, the, you know, the Rangers, the, you know, whoever, the Jets, the Giants, whatever the story may be. But it's always going to come back to who we are, I believe. You know, I have now a partner who's got two kids under the age of four. My producer is a single guy living in Bradley Beach in a condo. I got, you know, my board op, he and his wife do yarn things around Christmas time. I don't know what the hell that is all about. I got Jerry Recco doing Rutgers games and doing pre and post and halftime for the Dallas Cowboy Radio Network. So we got a really great thing and people in different stages of their life. And I think part of talking to our audience is reliving some of the experiences that we have that I know that they have.
Right.
And I know you and I started, you know, talking about, you know, the roads on Long Island and what a pain in the ass it is and how we all have that in common. Yeah. And it's probably one of the reasons why there are so many comedians from Long Island, because we all deal with the same bullshit. And it actually is quite funny when you think about it.
I tell my family members who all live on Long Island, we're all in Nassau County. You have to be an idiot to live on Long Island, and yet we all do it. I mean, between what we pay, the road, you know, everything, but here we are. So it's true. And the last thing is, you know, I don't know what it's like around the country, but, you know, we're in this changing media landscape. You know, people think TV is dead and it's all about streaming, although not with the NFL. And we're in a streaming world. We're in a podcast world. We're in a listen to whatever you want world. But here in New York, the Fan is still such a big thing. You know, I say this to Sal all the time. I'm like, especially when he got the permit over, I'm like, the Fan in New York is, even in this day and age, is a major, major thing. I don't know what it's like. I'm sure EEI is the same way in Boston. But I feel like whatever happens with radio, the fan is an institution here.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, certainly sports is a big part of it. You know, I think demographics are changing, though, a lot around here, especially. Yeah. I feel like, you know, there's more and more types of people that live here. There are more and more, or I should say there are less sports fans. You know, more people interested in more, you know, a different aspect of society, but in a good way. It's all good. It's all different. It's a melting pot. It's what makes New York truly special. But to me, when the Yankees or the Giants or the Rangers or the Knicks are good, or the Jets are good, or the Mets are good, man, there is nothing like it. There's nothing like being in the middle of all of that, whether it be the Matt Harvey, you know, should he pitch the ninth inning, or right. Rex Ryan taking his team to the AFC championship games, or the Giants going on unexpected Super Bowl runs, or the Yankees winning a World Series. I've been a part of all of those things.
Yeah.
And I can tell you from a radio standpoint at the fan, man, just the engagement with the people out there and the passion of our fans here in New York, there's really nothing like it. And we're kind of going through it now a little bit. We go through it more with coaches than anything else because we're firing coaches left and right. But I think quarterbacks here, top end athletes like Julius Randle is going through it right now. I think James Harden's feeling a little bit of what it means to play here and how hard it is to play here. So there's always something, there's always some drama to discuss in the sports world.
And I always say the biggest tragedy for New Yorkers who may be, I don't know, 25 years or younger, maybe even, I don't know, maybe now it's even 30 years old. The people who couldn't experience what the Knicks were like when they were good. People don't, I mean, I sort of feel, and maybe I'm biased because I'm a Yankee fan. I know you're a Met fan. Whatever has happened with the Yankees over the last 20 years, that intensity, the winning, the city being behind it, it was just like that for the Knicks. People don't understand that. The Knicks were right on that Yankee level for all those years with Riley and Van Gundy. And now it's been 20 years of an embarrassment, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, I just, as growing up a Knick fan and being a Walt Clyde Frazier guy, I had to have his Puma Clydes. You know, that's what I was playing in at East Islip High School when I was playing. But, you know, watching the playoffs last year and watching how the Knick fan came out to support the team, and unfortunately they lose to the Hawks, was really disappointing. And then this year has just been a total collapse and disaster, and they brought the wrong people in. And now all of a sudden we got to look at the decision-making again. You know, I thought they got it right with Thibodeau. You know, and I really do believe that. And I know he's a grinder, and I know he, you know, preaches and practices hard, and I kind of like that. But, you know, the Knicks have never been able to get a major star here in his prime since Patrick Ewing. I mean, Carmelo, I don't know what that whole thing was all about. You know, I mean, and then you had Julius Randle, who's not really a top end star. He's not even a top 20 player, I don't think, in the league. So it's back to the drawing board for the Knicks. Yeah. I can say that.
Last thing, anything special planned for Monday morning on Boomer and Geo if the Bengals win? What do we got going on?
Well, if the Bengals win, I might have to do something special. But, you know, let's just keep, like, you know, let's not touch the money there, Jimmy. If you've learned one thing from listening to me on the radio, is never touch the money. So I'm not planning anything, but I will adjust my plans if things go the right way.
Last night, the Knicks played the Jazz, and I bet over 23.5 points for Donovan Mitchell. He had 21 at halftime, and I texted a friend, if I lose this one, it's going to be the worst loss of my life. And he said, you shouldn't even put that out there. I was like, you're right. I shouldn't put that out there. But, you know, it ended up working. I said, watch him sprain his ankle.
I know, but you got to be careful about stuff like that. That's, you do. You know, that's a real thing. That is a real thing.
I agree. I'm a big believer in karma and jinxing. Big believer in it. But that's because I'm a degenerate sports gambler, so that comes into play there. Boomer, I appreciate you coming on. I know are you doing like a million radio hits this week?
Yeah, I'm pretty busy this week, and it's pretty good, but I can do it from the comforts of my home. So as long as I'm not traveling, if I was out in LA, I'd be in the back of a car going from, you know, different venues and different parties and different appearances. So this way I can enjoy the Super Bowl and relax right here in New York.
Well, good luck to the Bengals, and appreciate you coming on NFL Today. That's done for this season, but we'll see Boomer on there next season in New York, WFAN, every morning from 6 to 10, Boomer and Geo. Boomer, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You got it, Jimmy. Thanks, man. Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time for our weekly Train of Thought segment. After a week of hiatus, we had some scheduling conflicts, but Sal Licata from WFAN Radio SNY-TV in New York is back. Sal, how are you?
Good. Good to be back with you. I miss you. I didn't realize I was getting texts from my buddies. Oh, where were you? I was like, dude, it was 1 week. Like, I didn't even think people cared.
People missed you.
Yeah. People missed you. But they do love, you know, the Nance and Buck episode in particular. I've gotten a lot of feedback on that one. That was a great, and even me, I enjoyed listening to that one.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that was a good episode where we had Roman Reigns. Someone on YouTube, a wrestling fan, took a 5 minute clip or maybe 3 minute clip of my interview with Roman Reigns, posted it themselves, and got 500,000 views on YouTube from it.
Wow. So, I hope you guys at SI got as many as that.
500,000? No. No. The guy's clip was 5 minutes of Roman Reigns. So those wrestling fans, they're rabid out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, every single radio show and podcast in America are going to do like, oh, what are the prop bets you're betting? Or what are the best props? Blah, blah, blah. So I figured, okay, we'll do the cliche thing here. Have you scouted any of the props for the Super Bowl?
I did. Now, I don't know about you, and I know you sometimes play the props. Like I've seen you tweet about it. We talk about it a little bit. Yep. I am not a big prop bettor. However, in the Super Bowl, it's a little different. The one thing that I was looking for would be a price. I look for like interesting, unique, fun bets, and then a price. Listen to this one that I've never seen before. Clock management props. Are you familiar with this?
No. Where Me is neither. This? What site is this on? Is it
FanDuel?
Okay.
This is FanDuel. Now, on site that I normally use, I don't even know like what props are those. But I was just searching through different ones. So clock management. And there's one that says, all right, team to have more time of possession, whatever. Rams minus 130, Bengals plus 106. Interesting, but whatever. This is the one that I found fascinating. LA Rams to use all six timeouts in regulation. Yes is plus 270. And the Bengals to use all six timeouts in regulation, yes, is plus 360. I found that interesting.
You definitely bet both and hope you hit one. And
exactly. That's exactly right. You're getting good odds. What are the odds that neither team is going to use all six timeouts?
I'm not shocked they offer that because they pretty much offer every single thing imaginable on the Super Bowl. I don't see those to me are a little... I'll do the coin flip for shits and giggles, and I'll
what do you
the
go
the length of the anthem.
What do you go with the coin flip? You have the same thing every year. You change.
I mix it up. Okay. I mix it up. Whatever.
I usually go heads.
But I for the Super Bowl, I love betting the game props more than anything else. I mean, I looked at it quickly, didn't fully study, but a bunch of them caught my eye already. Cooper Kupp longest reception, 28.5 yards. I love that over.
Okay.
The over is minus 140 on that one. Over 3.5 rushing yards for Jamar Chase. So to me, you need one reverse in that game. And
that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
You have Mixon numbers?
I don't have them written down. They're on the site. Over 1.5 sacks for the Bengals. Stafford can't move. I like you minus 150, but I like that one.
Stafford picks, now that you mentioned, I think I'm going to take the over, whatever that is. And you and I are both in agreement there with Stafford always being a disaster at times.
And here's one if you want to just take a flyer on value to throw $10 on it. Overtime, plus 1950.
You know,
every playoff game has been close. Every playoff game has been close.
Somebody texted me that saying the way that this year has gone, this game is definitely going overtime. And that's great.
Yeah.
Great.
And then the last one, which is the one I think I love the most out of every single prop bet, is over 1.5 field goals for the Bengals. McPherson's a minus 115.
Even so, that's not that bad. It's not bad at all. Money.
Nope. I'm all in on that one. That's for sure. That is for sure.
They do the – I'm just looking at this site, running back, receiving props, but then it's like the versus. I don't want the Mixon versus Akers. I just want Mixon over yardage receiving, maybe to score. I don't know. There's a billion, and that's kind of where I get myself into trouble. You know me. I could be reckless with this stuff. So where there's – you know, I get antsy. Like there's so many, oh, yeah, I like this, I like that. And the more you bet, the more you're going to lose. And then if they're 130, 150, 160 at a clip – before you know it, even if you win four of the bets, you're still down money. So I got to be careful and pick my spots. And generally, I'm going to look for something that's either plus money or kind of even. I think I may go Stafford over INTs, though, because I think he's going to make some mistakes in this one.
That clip where you say I get reckless is going to be the one I pull for Twitter, just so you know. I think it's ridiculous, everything that's offered. It's way too overwhelming. I can't. It's just too much. That's why I just stick to the game props. So you'll watch the game Sunday with some family members. What's the menu?
Kind of a low key party here with just my immediate family. We have I ordered Hero traditional. Usually for Super Bowl I go Hero, half Italian, half American, 4 foot, no big deal because not that many people. And then some wings and obviously chips. And my wife's making pigs in a blanket, which is
I don't think there's anything I hate more for any kind of party, festivities, barbecue, whatever, than a Hero.
Yeah.
I hate it.
My wife would agree with you. For me, I enjoy it, but generally only for Super Bowl. Like if we were having whatever, hosting a party, you know, we did the community, the baptism, whatever the hell it was called back then, the baby blessing thing. I would never serve Hero for that. And even my wife is like, Hero, that's what you're doing. But for me, it's like kind of a Super Bowl. I used to cater the parties at the Fan when I first started there. I would bring in 6 foot Hero because I used to have to work. So I figured I'd bring the party there. So I don't know. It's just always been a staple for whatever reason.
Will you watch the pregame show?
No. I mean, I'll have it on as background noise. Maybe play some video games with my nephew or something. I won't. No, it's way too. What time does it start? Like 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock?
The pregame starts at noon.
What?
On NBC. Yes. Noon.
Now, who's
NBC.
Doing it?
NBC. Like
not
Tirico and they have 8 million. Tony Dungy, Rodney Harris.
The main crew is going to be going from 12 o'clock on?
Well, they have 50 people on the NBC pregame show.
Right.
Chris Collinsworth's kid and Maria Taylor and they trot someone else out. Chris Sims, Florio. Right.
They'll probably okay.
King. Yeah.
Rodney Harrison. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Drew Brees. No, I will not be watching that.
Will you bet the anthem length?
I don't know who's singing it. I've never heard of the person. I don't think
me either. I have never heard of the person either. And that makes me think that I'm really old.
You know what I want to bet is I saw some halftime props, like which song will Eminem start with? Who's going to open? Maybe I'll get into that because I like Eminem. I like the halftime act. So maybe I'll get into that. I will not bet the anthem in this case. If I knew who it was, maybe, but no. And it really
the person
doesn't
singing the anthem is Mickey Guyton.
Now, who is that?
I have no. It says here country singer. So that explains why I've never heard of the person.
Right.
So I'm not familiar with that person at all. The halftime show. Yeah. Cause they usually have will they curse? Will there be a wardrobe malfunction?
Will Eminem make a political statement was one that I saw.
They're not going to do anything because they wouldn't have gotten the gig if the NFL thought the NFL made them, I'm sure, sign all these documents saying they're not doing anything like that.
Right. But it is Eminem. I mean, when does he listen to that? And what constitutes as a political statement? Anyway, that was one. Like, I wouldn't even know where to begin with that. But what song they do or who starts it, you know, is Kendrick Lamar or Mary J going to start? Whatever. I think that could be interesting. And even with that, though, it's just, there's such crapshoots. Who the hell knows?
Yeah. I don't like betting those. Those are too bizarre for me.
I remember years ago when Katy Perry was like, which song is she going to open with? Roar.
Since we were talking about the Super Bowl halftime show, let me transition into this. Because with no football this weekend for the first time since September, basically August, if you count college football, no football the entire weekend. I went on a binge marathon. And one of the things I watched was the Janet Jackson 4-part documentary, and was very disappointed in the coverage of the halftime. I wanted more. They didn't give us a ton on it. It's really more about Janet Jackson's career, which was very interesting. And she got shafted so badly. It was, I mean, for her to basically get blackballed after that Super Bowl show was absurd. She totally got shafted. She's had an unreal career. Great songs, great catalog. But that documentary didn't give me enough on the Super Bowl controversy with Justin Timberlake.
We just saw a documentary on the Super Bowl. I wouldn't have minded more on that. I loved that special. So I was into it. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a big Janet fan. And I thought behind the scenes, like her, you know, there was some excellent footage in there and things that I didn't.
I agree with all that. I agree. Everything on her career was great. Right. I wanted more on the Super Bowl. I thought that was going to be what the gist of the show was, but it wasn't at all.
Right.
It's really about her career.
Her response, you know, she acknowledged it but didn't really give a definitive answer one way or another on exactly what happened.
She said it was an accident.
She took the high road.
She said it was an accident. Okay. Right. So how did it happen?
Yeah, well, exactly. And we would have liked some more details, but she didn't want to get into it. And maybe she didn't want to throw anybody under the bus. But you're right. The fact that she got blackballed the way she did for that was ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The other thing I binged that I thought was I was riveted to was on Showtime. There's also, I think it's 4 parts on Bill Cosby.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't even know about that.
Excellent.
What is it? So what does it go into? His whole career?
His career, what he meant for Black comedians and basically the entire Black community. And then his, you know, how he became a star in the 70s, the shows he did, how he transformed into sort of an educator, the Cosby Show, then all the allegations, then he goes to jail. The women come out. Everyone has the same story about how he drugged them.
Oh, my God.
How he did it.
And this is going on forever, like through his whole career?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. And the one thing I had forgotten about or maybe didn't process was also like post-Cosby Show, late in his life, he really began speaking out about people not doing the right thing or not behaving properly. And, he was saying, like, take care of your kids. And all. I had forgotten that he had grown into sort of that kind of person. So the whole thing was really well. It was really well done by Showtime. And
how many hours is this?
Four episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to probably sign up for Showtime just to watch that. I'd be intrigued. Yeah.
Then I watched the first 3 episodes of the Pam and Tommy thing on Hulu. Crap.
Where's that on again? That's on Hulu?
Hulu.
Okay, I got to put that on the list.
And that was ridiculous.
No good? Don't waste my time?
Good's not the... No. It's like, I went into it thinking like it would be sort of like how the sex tape got out, how it got on the internet, what it did to that. Like, and it,
well,
it's really about...
It's not a documentary, right? It's actors playing.
Right.
Which I hate. Right. That's cheesy.
Well, the word that you just said is the word to describe every second of this show. Cheese. It's cheese. Every single thing is cheese. Now, listen, I got a kick out of it. And it was kind of amusing because, you know, that was a time when, I don't know, I guess I was in college. So, you know, it was a huge story. You know, Tommy Lee, I mean, I've heard Tommy Lee on Stern a million times, Pamela Anderson, right. There's stuff about the Baywatch in there where she had like this big dramatic scene and they cut it because she can't act. It was, you know, it's interesting stuff, but it was not what you have to go into it. Here's the thing. It's about your mind. First of all, I tweeted this. I thought it was a 2-hour movie. It's 8 episodes.
which is too many.
And there's only three out right now, and then they come out, I think, every Wednesday.
They're each an hour?
Way too many. Yeah, like 40 minutes. Way too many. So I went into it thinking a two-hour movie, and now it's like eight episodes. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I don't want to be dealing with this. You have to go into it knowing it's going to be cheese and almost like a character of everything, and then it's fine.
Okay. I mean, I still might check it out, but I don't know. The fact that it's so cheesy, the fact that it's not a real documentary and that it's eight episodes, am I really going to waste, you know, 6 hours of my life or whatever it is on it?
And then the other thing I watched was The Tuck Rule, 30 for 30 ESPN. Did you watch that?
No, I got to put this on my list too. I'm hoping I could get it on demand and not have to do the ESPN Plus thing. I heard it was great though. Was it good?
How do you not have ESPN Plus?
I don't want more stuff. I want less stuff.
I've told you this before. There's a bundle, Hulu, ESPN Plus, Disney Plus. You get all three for like $13
a month. I have Disney. I pay for Disney. I get Hulu through my sister, and then I don't have ESPN
Plus. Just get the bundle. You get all three.
Well, yeah, but listen to what you say. Somebody else told me about the Joe Montana special that's on Peacock. Now I got to get Peacock back again because I canceled that because I'm not watching anything that's on there. Now I got to get Showtime because I want to see the Cosby thing. Now I have to get ESPN Plus because I want to see the Tuck Rule. You're talking about $20-$30 a month.
Anyway, the Tuck Rule was good. I enjoyed it. I love seeing Brady in those situations. But if you didn't see it, I don't want to spoil it for you. But the last minute of the Tuck Rule focuses on Walt Coleman, who made the call in that game.
Okay.
I still can't believe what was said and what I saw.
Okay.
The last minute of the Tuck Rule, you have to watch that.
All right. I'm definitely going to check that out. It's on my list.
The Patriots throw a party every time Walt Coleman calls one of their games. It's unbelievable.
Is he a big Pats fan?
Well, he's a ref. He can't be a fan, but yeah, well, that last minute is very suspect. Did you watch anything this weekend with no football? What did you do?
I did. We watched Ozark, okay, which I'm sure you're not into. You're not into Ozark, right? I watched House of Gucci. Familiar with that? Lady Gaga?
Yeah, Lady Gaga, yeah.
Yeah, it was all right. She wasn't that great. And I like Lady Gaga. She wasn't that great. An interesting story, but I wasn't, didn't love it. I'm pretty sure that was it. There may have been, look, we're watching 90 Day Fiancé, crap like that. That's on DVR. God. Yeah, I know.
That's rough.
I did the dishes for the first time on a Sunday in like 22 weeks.
That was a great tweet.
I mean, it's true. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, it's 4 o'clock on a Sunday. What am I doing washing dishes? And my wife is excited now because she knows after Sunday, and Super Bowl Sunday's a party anyway, so that doesn't even really count. That's it. I'm back 2 days a week.
I'd rather do dishes than watch 90 Day Fiancé. That's just me.
That is true.
We've gotten some reviews lately. I'm going to read some of them here because we haven't done that in a while. We'll do this for a couple of minutes and then wrap it up. Because I want, if someone leaves a review, I want to be able to read it. So let me read the couple that came in last week. Got one here from Dan Corrado. I've rated and reviewed this podcast about 6 times. It's in my weekly rotation. Jimmy is awesome. He's funny. He's authentic. He asks for more reviews. He gets more reviews. Yeah, it would be nice. I don't need Jimmy is awesome. Just leave the review. That's what helps. I appreciate that. That's a good job right there. And yes, being in the weekly rotation, that's all I need. We got one here from a guy woman who left a name with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. So top 5 weekly pod. Jimmy does a great job. Great interview. Great guest. Okay. That's good. Top 5 weekly pod. That's it. Maybe this is all the same person here. Royce says, always look forward to Jimmy's pod each week. Great guest. Great conversation. See, so that's what I need. Okay.
So does it rate and review? That's what matters. If they rate it to 5 stars and just write whatever review.
Yeah.
Okay.
This one is off of last week's interview with Brian Curtis from The Ringer. Outstanding interview. Jimmy always brings a fun and interesting approach to his interviews and content, and the insights and opinions between Jimmy and Brian on the topics they cover in the show makes for a great listen. That was a really good pod if you're into sports media, if you missed it last week, the Brian Curtis one. Now here we go. We've got World B Deeves. Jimmy and Sal give me a taste of New York every week. Taking my son for spring break to NYC to eat pizza. Where do we go? Chris in San Antonio. Joe's Pizza, Carmine Street. That's where you go.
The best pizza I've ever had was with you, and it was in Brooklyn. DeFara Pizza.
That was DeFara.
Oh my God. I remember the day vividly. You came and met me in the city, took the subway there. It was the best. I still crave it to this day. I've never been back.
DeFara's in Brooklyn is excellent. And I loved it that day, but there's been many stories about them getting the bad rating, and it makes me a little queasy.
What do you mean?
Not to think about it. You know, like they had to get shut down, I think, once. They got like Fs for the...
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? As good as that pizza was, I couldn't care what rats are going in and out of there. I love that crap. I mean, watching that old guy, you know, work over the stove like that was tremendous.
Yeah. I agree with that. It's a show in and of itself, but I would go to Joe's Carmine Street. I think it's Carmine Street. Let me make sure though.
I get them all mixed up. There's so many good ones. And
it's Joe's Pizza. Of course, now I'm not going to be able to find it. Oh, Carmine Street.
Down so by where we work, like near Four World Trade?
No, it's more like Midtown. And then the last review, solid host and guest. This is a well-done podcast, high-level name. Most weeks, great in-depth analysis of both action and the technical sides of sports. All right, so I appreciate all that. And if you're listening, keep them coming. We need that. And then the other thing was I went on Twitter to ask who people wanted on the podcast this week. And this is what's funny about Twitter. This was a very difficult week to book the podcast because everyone in sports media is out in LA. I was very lucky. Boomer Esiason, and he didn't go to LA. So he was able to come on, which was great. I asked people, who would you want on this week? And I thought, and this is my mistake, you really got to spell it out on Twitter. You can't leave anything up to sort of interpretation. Because my thinking was, who do you want on this week? Because it's Super Bowl week. And people were writing back like Jeff Passan. No, that's not the week for it. Or, you know, give me something on the baseball strike. It's, you know, so we did get, you know, people were asking for Chris Collinsworth, who's calling. I asked for Collinsworth because he's calling the game, got rejected. So that's fine. It happens. Everyone wants Francesa on this podcast. I don't think Mike would ever do it.
If you do that, can we do a three-way? We got to do that.
I don't think. Why would I? Mean, I think I've written negative things about Mike over the years that I don't think he'd want to come on.
Of course, he'd come on. 100%, he would come on.
Tons of people wanted J.D. Harmeyer from the Howard Stern Show on this show this week because we covered it last week with Joe Buck. There was a big bet on the Stern Show. J.D.'s a huge Bengals fan. But the Stern crew, they're not allowed to do outside interviews. They're only for Howard. So I would love to have J.D. on. I love J.D. But no one from Stern, even if it's Gary, they don't do outside interviews.
By the way, that was my best, my favorite part of that podcast where Buck finished with, are you going to ask Nance all this shit?
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
I freaking love Joe Buck, man. He's great.
A lot of people ask for Schrager and Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football. They're on all the time, and they're in LA, and they're doing their show live at 4:45 in LA. So I didn't want to ask them to come on this week. A lot of people ask for Dog isn't Chris Russo. He's in LA. And then I was surprised how many people wanted like baseball people on. I'm like, there's plenty of time for baseball. So I just wanted to get that out there for people. I appreciate the response. I appreciate the suggestions. I want to give you a little insight as to why someone wouldn't come on or didn't come on this week. So, but we had a great
episode. I mean, Boomer's a great get. So you're lucky he didn't go to the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So it was a good episode with Boomer and Sal. So Sal, enjoy the Super Bowl. Good luck with the props. Don't get out of control.
Yeah.
Don't get reckless. Couple of wagers, low figures. Keep it that way.
You too. I'll talk to you on the other side.
Take it easy. All right. My thanks to Boomer Esiason and Sal Licata for Train of Thoughts this week. Before I let you go, just a reminder, if you missed any recent episodes, dip into the archives and check those out. Brian Curtis from The Ringer last week on a slew of sports media topics. Had a mega episode 2 weeks ago with Roman Reigns from WWE, Joe Buck, Jim Nance. So check those out, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll try to read the review on the pod 1 week. And that's it. Enjoy the Super Bowl, everyone. Stay safe and take care. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.